Chapter 3. In prior fatis, altera sepida qua. As the city itself stands in a vale on the bank, and at the conjunction of two small rivers, so the country rising every way, but just as the course of the water keeps the valley open, you must necessarily, as you go out of the gates, go uphill every rise. But when once ascended, you come to the most charming plains, and most pleasant country of that kind in England, which continues with very small intersections of rivers and valleys for above 50 miles, as shall appear in the sequel of this journey. At the west gate of this city, was anciently a castle, known to be so by the ruins more than by any extraordinary notice taken of it in history. What they say of it, that the Saxon kings kept their court here, is doubtful, and must be meant of the West Saxons only. And as to the tale of King Arthur's Round Table, which they pretend, was kept here for him, and his 2 dozen of knights, which table hangs up still, as a piece of antiquity to the tune of 1200 years, and has, as they pretend, the names of the said knights in Saxon characters, and yet such as no man can read, all this story I see, so little ground to give the least credit to, that I look upon it, and it shall please you, to be no better than a fib. Where this castle stood, or whatever else it was, for some say there was no castle there, the late King Charles II marked out a very noble design, which, had he lived, would certainly have made that part of the country the new market of the ages to come. For the country hereabout far excels that of Newmarket Heath for all kinds of sport and diversion fit for a prince, nobody can dispute. And as the design included a noble palace sufficient, like Windsor, for a summer residence of the whole court, it would certainly have diverted the king from his cursory journeys to Newmarket. The plan of this house has received several alterations, and as it is never like to be finished, it is scarce worth recording the variety. The building is begun, and the front next the city carried up to the roof and covered, but the remainder is not begun. There was a street of houses designed from the gate of the palace down to the town, but it was never begun to be built. The park marked out was exceeding large, near 10 miles in circumference, and ended west upon the open downs, in view of the town of Stockbridge. This house was afterwards settled, with a royal revenue also, as an appanage established by Parliament, upon Prince George of Denmark for his life, in case he had outlived the Queen. But his Royal Highness dying before Her Majesty, all hope of seeing this design perfected, or the house finished, is now vanished. I cannot omit that there are several public edifices in this city and in the neighborhood, as the hospitals and the building adjoining near the East Gate, and towards the north a piece of an old monastery undemolished, and which is still preserved to the religion, being the residence of some private Roman Catholic gentlemen, where they have an oratory, and, as they say, live still according to the rules of Saint Benedict. This building is called Hyde House, and as they live very usefully, and to the highest degree obliging among their neighbors, they meet with no obstruction or disturbance from anybody. Winchester is a place of no trade other than is naturally occasioned by the inhabitants of the city and neighboring villages one with another. Here is no manufacture, no navigation. There was indeed an attempt to make the river navigable from Southampton, and it was once made practicable, but it never answered the expense so as to give encouragement to the undertakers. Here is a great deal of good company, and abundance of gentry being in the neighborhood, it adds to the sociableness of the place. The clergy also here are, generally speaking, very rich and very numerous. As there is such good company, so they are gotten into that new-fashioned way of conversing by assemblies. I shall do no more than mention them here. They are pleasant and agreeable to the young peoples, and sometimes fatal to them, of which, in its place, Winchester has its share of the mirth. May it escape the ill consequences. The hospital on the south of this city, at a mile distant on the road to Southampton, is worth notice. It is said to be founded by King William Rufus, but was not endowed or appointed till later times by Cardinal Beaufort. Every traveler that knocks at the door of this house in his way, and asks for it, claims the relief of a piece of white bread and a cup of beer, and this donation is still continued. A quantity of good beer is set apart every day to be given away, and what is left is distributed to other poor, but none of it kept to the next day. How the revenues of this hospital, which should maintain the master and 30 private gentlemen, whom they call fellows, but ought to call brothers, is now reduced to maintain only 14, while the master lives in a figure equal to the best gentleman in the country, would be well worth the inquiry of a proper visitor, if such can be named. It is a thing worthy of complaint when public charities, designed for the relief of the poor, are embezzled and depredated by the rich, and turned to the support of luxury and pride. From Winchester is about 25 miles, and over the most charming plains that can anywhere be seen, far, in my opinion, excelling the plains of Mecca, we come to Salisbury. The vast flocks of sheep which one everywhere sees upon these downs, and the great number of those flocks, is a sight truly worth observation. It is ordinary for these flocks to contain from 3,000 to 5,000 in a flock, and several private farmers hereabouts have two or three such flocks. But it is more remarkable still, how a great part of these downs comes, by a new method of husbandry, to be not only made arable, which they never were in former days, but to bear excellent wheat, and great crops too, though otherwise poor barren land, and never known to our ancestors, to be capable of any such thing. Nay, they would perhaps have laughed at any one that would have gone about to plow up the wild downs and hills, where the sheep were wont to go. But experience has made the present age wiser, and more skillful in husbandry. For by only folding the sheep upon the ploughed lands, those lands which otherwise are barren, and where the plough goes within 3 or 4 inches of the solid rock of chalk, are made fruitful and bear very good wheat, as well as rye and barley. I shall say more of this when I come to speak of the same practice farther in the country. This plain country continues in length from Winchester to Salisbury, 25 miles, from thence to Dorchester, 22 miles, comma thence to Weymouth, 6 miles, so that they lie near 50 miles in length and breadth. They reach also in some places 35 to 40 miles. They who would make any practicable guess at the number of sheep usually fed on these downs, may take it from a calculation made, as I was told, at Dorchester, that there were 600,000 sheep fed within 6 miles of that town, measuring every way round and the town in the center. As we passed this plain country, we saw a great many old camps, as well Roman as British, and several remains of the ancient inhabitants of this kingdom, and of their wars, battles, entrenchments, encampments, buildings, and other fortifications, which are indeed very agreeable to a traveler that has read anything of the history of the country. Old Sarum is as remarkable as any of these, where there is a double entrenchment, with a deep trap or ditch to either of them, the area about 100 yards in diameter, taking in the whole crown of the hill, and thereby rendering the ascent very difficult. Near this there is one farmhouse, which is all the remains I could see of any town in, or near the place, for the encampment has no resemblance of a town, and yet this is called the borough of Old Sarum, and sends 2 members to Parliament. Whom those members can justly say they represent, would be hard for them to answer. Some will have it, that the old city of Sorbiogenum or Salisbury stood here, and was afterwards, for I know not what reasons, removed to the low marshy grounds among the rivers, where it now stands. But as I see no authority for it other than mere tradition, I believe my share of it, and take it ad referendum. Salisbury itself is indeed a large and pleasant city, though I do not think it at all the pleasanter for that which they boast so much of, namely, the water running through the middle of every street, or that it adds anything to the beauty of the place, but just the contrary. It keeps the streets always dirty, full of wet, and filth and weeds, even in the middle of summer. The city is placed upon the confluence of two large rivers, the Avon and the Willy, neither of them considerable rivers, but very large when joined together, and yet larger when they receive a third river, viz. The Natter, which joins them near Clarendon Park, about 3 miles below the city. Then, with a deep channel and a current less rapid, they run down to Christchurch, which is their port, and where they empty themselves into the sea. From that town upwards towards Salisbury they are made navigable to within 2 miles, and might be so quite into the city, were it not for the strength of the stream. As the city of Winchester is a city without trade, that is to say, without any particular manufactures, so this city of Salisbury and all the county of Wilts, of which it is the capital, are full of a great variety of manufactures, and though some of the most considerable in England, namely, the clothing trade and the trade of flannels, druggets, and several other sorts of manufactures, of which in their order, the city of Salisbury has two remarkable manufactures carried on in it, and which employ the poor of great part of the country round, namely, fine flannels, and long cloths for the Turkey trade, called Salisbury whites. The people of Salisbury are gay and rich, and have a flourishing trade, and there is a great deal of good manners, and good company among them, I mean, among the citizens, besides what is found among the gentlemen. For there are many good families in Salisbury besides the citizens. This society has a great addition from the close, that is to say, the circle of ground walled in adjacent to the cathedral, in which the families of the prebendaries and commons, and others of the clergy belonging to the cathedral, have their houses, as is usual in all cities, where there are cathedral churches. These are so considerable here, and the place so large, that it is, as it is called in general, like another city. The cathedral is famous for the height of its spire, which is without exception the highest and the handsomest in England, being from the ground 410 feet, and yet the walls, so exceeding thin that at the upper part of the spire, upon a view made by the late Sir Christopher Wren, the wall was found to be less than 5 inches thick. Upon which a consultation was had whether the spire, or at least the upper part of it, should be taken down, it being supposed to have received some damage by the great storm in the year 1703, but it was resolved in the negative, and Sir Christopher ordered it to be so strengthened with bands of iron plates as has effectually secured it, and I have heard some of the best architects say it is stronger now than when it was first built. They tell us here long stories of the great art used in laying the first foundation of this church, the ground being marshy and wet, occasioned by the channels of the rivers, that it was laid upon piles, according to some, and upon wool packs, according to others. But this is not supposed by those who know that the whole country is one rock of chalk, even from the tops of the highest hills to the bottom of the deepest rivers. They tell us this church was 40 years a building, and cost an immense sum of money, but it must be acknowledged that the inside of the work is not answerable in the decoration of things to the workmanship without. The painting in the choir is mean, and more like the ordinary method of common drawing room or tavern painting than that of a church. The carving is good, but very little of it, and it is rather a fine church than finely set off. The ordinary boast of this building that there were as many gates as months, as many windows as days, as many marble pillars as hours in the year, is now no recommendation at all. However, the mention of it must be preserved. As many days as in one year there be, so many windows in one church we see, as many marble pillars there appear as there are hours throughout the fleeting year, as many gates as moons one year do view. Strange tale to tell, yet not more strange than true. There are, however, some very fine monuments in this church, particularly one belonging to the noble family of Seymours, since Dukes of Somerset and ancestors of the present flourishing family, which on a most melancholy occasion has been now lately opened again, to receive the body of the late Duchess of Somerset, the happy consort for almost 40 years of His Grace the present Duke, and only daughter and heiress of the ancient and noble family of Percy, Earls of Northumberland, whose great estate she brought into the family of Somerset, who now enjoy it. With her was buried at the same time Her Grace's daughter the Marchioness of Carmarthen, being married to the Marquis of Carmarthen, son and heir apparent to the Lord of Leeds, who died for grief at the loss of the Duchess her mother, and was buried with her. Also her second son, the Duke Percy Somerset, who died a few months before, and had been buried in the Abbey Church of Westminster, but was ordered to be removed, and laid here with the ancestors of his house. And I hear His Grace designs to have a yet more magnificent monument erected in this cathedral for them, just by the other which is there already. How the Dukes of Somerset came to quit this church for their burying place, and be laid in Westminster Abbey, that I know not, but it is certain that the present Duke has chosen to have his family laid here with their ancestors, and to that end has caused the corpse of his son, the Lord Percy, as above, and one of his daughters, who had been buried in the Abbey, to be removed and brought down to this vault, which lies in, that they call the Virgin Mary's Chapel, behind the altar. There is, as above, a noble monument for a late Duke and Duchess of Somerset in the place already, with their portraits at full length, their heads lying upon cushions, the whole perfectly well wrought in fine polished Italian marble, and their sons kneeling by them. Those I suppose to be the father of the great Duke of Somerset, uncle to King Edward IV. Semicolon. But after this the family lay in Westminster Abbey, where there is also a fine monument for that very Duke who was beheaded by Edward VI, and who was the great patron of the Reformation. Among other monuments of noble men in this cathedral they show you one that is very extraordinary, and to which there hangs a tale. There was in the reign of Philip and Mary a very unhappy murder committed by the then Lord Sturton, or Sturton, a family since extinct, but well known till within a few years in that country. This Lord Sturton being guilty of the said murder, which also was aggravated with very bad circumstances, could not obtain the usual grace of the crown, viz. To be beheaded, but Queen Mary positively ordered that, like a common malefactor, he should die at the gallows. After he was hanged, his friends desiring to have him buried at Salisbury, the bishop would not consent that he should be buried in the cathedral unless, as a farther mark of infamy, his friends would submit to this condition, viz. That the silken altar in which he was hanged should be hanged up over his grave in the church as a monument of his crime, which was accordingly done, and there it is to be seen to this day. The putting this altar up here was not so wonderful to me as it. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.